Start your summer road trip at Midas and get up to $30 off your next repair service. Plus, get a free closer look vehicle check to make sure you're road trip ready. So if you need brake service, an alignment check, or tune-up, hit up Midas for up to $30 off. For more details, request your appointment at Midas.com.
TuneIn is the audio platform with something for everyone. News.
In order to secure convictions in a court of law, it is essential that we conclusively.
Sports.
Shot clock at 4. Doncic. The step back 3. You bet.
Music.
You set my world on fire. Yes,
and even podcasts. Whatever you love, hear it right here on TuneIn. Go to TuneIn.com or download the TuneIn app to start listening.
Plug in a Hyundai EV and the extraordinary happens. It's not just the ultra-fast charging capability and long range in the IONIQ 5 and IONIQ 6, or the adventure-seeking spirit of the Kona Electric, or the groundbreaking 601-horsepower IONIQ 5N. And it's not just the comfort in knowing that every Hyundai EV is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited electric battery warranty. Hyundai's EVs transform a low hum into a loud adventure. They bring color to your journey and turn energy into main character energy. So forget everything you thought you knew about EVs and turn the extraordinary into something truly electrifying. There's joy in every journey.
EPA estimated 303-mile driving range for 2024 IONIQ 5 SE SEL limited rear-wheel drive and 361-mile driving range for 2024 IONIQ 6 SE long-range rear-wheel drive with fully charged battery. Estimated range varies for other models and trims and depends on battery capacity, temperature options, and other factors. Limited battery warranty covers defects and materials for 10 years or 100,000 miles, whichever occurs first. See owner's manual for complete warranty details and limitations. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details.
Healthy baby skin starts from the bottom. Pampers Swaddlers diapers absorb wetness away from the skin better than the leading value brand, with up to 100% leak-proof protection to help keep your baby's skin dry. Don't forget to pair Pampers diapers with new Pampers Free and Gentle Wipes. They clean better and are 5 times stronger than Huggies Natural Care for easy cleanup without fear of tearing, no matter the mess. For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician-recommended brand.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network, this is a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show as we broadcast to you live from our 345 Hudson Street studios, centered on top of the 10th floor, ready to have another great day and a great week of shows right here on the Infinity Sports Network across all of our great local affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. 855-212-4227 is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, X, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Got Ryan Botcher, got Stuart Kovacs rocking and rolling with me all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time. John Rothstein, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, is going to join us 40 minutes from now. He'll preview the NBA draft with round one coming your way tomorrow, and you have round two on Thursday. Outside of the Bronny James factor, does anybody give a rat's ass about round two? But obviously some intrigue on who's going to be the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. We'll see where Donovan Clingan go. Can you pair him maybe with Victor Wembanyama? So some things brewing with the NBA draft. So we'll bring on John Rothstein 40 minutes from now. We'll go to Detroit at 4:20 p.m. Eastern time, 1:20 p.m. Pacific. And we'll talk to Willie Mack III, a professional golfer. He's did tee it up a few weeks ago and did tee off in the U.S. Open. And now he'll be participating in the Rocket Mortgage Classic that gets underway on Thursday. And then in the final hour of the show, we'll be joined by Liam McHugh, NHL on TNT studio host, as we will recap the Stanley Cup Final. That's where we'll start the show off today. It was a very good game last night. It's everything that you could ask for outside of, I would have liked to have seen overtime, but you had a great storyline and multiple storylines going in with the Edmonton Oilers on the verge of completing this great historical comeback. And then the Florida Panthers were on the verge of joining a community that no one wants to be a part of, and that's the Chokers Club. Because that's what the Florida Panthers are very close to doing after being up 3-0 and then seeing that lead vanish and having a Game 7 in their building last night. Well, let's be honest, no one thought the Florida Panthers were going to win that game. Like, could they have won the game? Yeah, obviously they could have won the game. But with the way momentum shifted and how Edmonton found a way to win not only Game 4, but Game 5 and Game 6, and the big question was what Sergei Bobrovsky would show up, it felt like this was Connor McDavid's time, and it felt like Connor McDavid was about to join the likes of David Ortiz with the 2004 Red Sox, Tom Brady when he had the 28-3 comeback against the Atlanta Falcons, LeBron James with that title team that he had in Cleveland coming back from down 3-1 with the Golden State Warriors, going up against the Golden State Warriors. Like, that's what it seemed like it was going to happen. And if that was the case, the Florida Panthers would have joined that community with the Warriors, with the Falcons, and the New York Yankees. Like, that's where they were going. But even though they were looking at being part of that infamous chokers list, they found a way when they needed to be the team that we've seen from them most of the year, the more physical, the team that controls and possesses the puck better. And also, you got the better part of Sergei Bobrovsky in a game 7. And that game last night, it was a very good game. I would have loved to have seen it get to overtime. It was a tremendous first period. You know, Florida scores quickly. They needed to get that first goal. Then a little over 2 minutes later, you get the Oilers. They answer back. But in that second period, it was very big, and it showed. And in these game 7s, especially in hockey, puck luck is a huge term. And it looked like Edmonton was about to cash in. They don't get the bounce to go their way. And then they come down the other way, and Reinhart gets the goal. And let's be real, Skinner's got to make that save. That's a soft goal to end up being the game-winning goal. Panthers fans, congratulations. You're elated. You love it. But Skinner's got to make that save. And that was a big thing going into this series. Even though Skinner was playing better, and he obviously started to do a better job in this series when they started to win games, it was a clear goalie advantage in favor of the Florida Panthers. And you saw that last night. But that second period was enormous, not only because you saw the Panthers take the 2-1 lead, because that building, I don't know if it was the way that ESPN produces the games, because their crowd noise has been a little funky all throughout the playoffs. It has been. And they don't do a great job producing these games. Like, the camera angles were insufferable. Absolutely. When they did that aerial shot last night, I'm like, can we just get back to shooting hockey like we normally shoot hockey? I'll give credit to McDonough and Ferraro. They've been criticized a lot. They did a good job. But in that second period, it seemed like for the first half of the second period that Edmonton was the better team. But on the scoreboard, it was 1-1. And that you could tell that building, it was alive, it was jumping. There was a lot of Oilers fans there, and obviously a ton of Panthers fans. The little, like, war between the national anthems before the game was fun. It was good energy in the first period. But then when it was 1-1, in those hockey crowds, obviously, there's nervous energy, especially when it's an elimination game and you have a game 7 and it's win or you're done, right? You win the game, you win the Stanley Cup, you lose. You either are part of the biggest choke job or maybe the biggest choke job in sports history or one of the greatest comebacks in sports history. Like, that was on the line last night. But in that second period, for the Panthers to go into the third with the 1-goal lead, not that the game was over, I thought it was enormous, because even though it kind of evened out at the end of the period, I did think the Oilers were the better team in that second period. And if Edmonton got a lead in that game, I don't think they're losing the game. But then basically what the third period turned into, it was the Panthers just being physical and just clearing the puck. And you knew you were going to see McDavid for basically like the entirety of the period. I didn't think it would be literally the entirety of the period, but that's what it felt like. And when they pulled the goalie, they just had no gas left in the tank because they had their big dogs out there for the entirety of the third period trying to get a goal. And Bobrovsky was really good. The defense in front of him was outstanding. There was a lot of times the puck didn't even get to Bobrovsky. But the two moments that stand out to me, or really three, Edmonton not capitalizing on that penalty that they got early in the third. That's number one. Then with 7 minutes to go, about roughly 7 minutes to go, maybe like 7:13, 7:14, something like that, McDavid's in front, and Hyman, he gets hooked. But let's be real. I don't think they're calling that with 7 minutes left. And they didn't. Like, that was keep the whistles out of it for the most part, and that was let the game be decided on the ice. You could definitely say that Hyman was hooked. I would not disagree with it, but I wasn't expecting the call to happen. But with that moment with 7 minutes to go, it was almost like the Oilers were dragged to thinking, okay, we're going to do this. And then right as they were about to come back from from down 3-0 in the series and get that fourth win, they just hit that brick wall. And when that mental game is so big, and I'll give credit to Brian Boucher, who said this yesterday with us on the show, where Boush was saying he actually thought there was more pressure on Edmonton going into the game last night than there were Florida, and everyone, including yours, truly disagreed. But that moment with 7 minutes to go, when they didn't put the puck in, it was like, oh my goodness gracious, I can't believe they didn't score. And then, I want to say it was under 3 minutes to go, Bobrovsky loses his stick. And it may be the most underrated part about the game, and people aren't going to talk about it because it was an icing, but how quickly, when Bobrovsky loses his stick, that the Panthers fire that puck down the other end just to get an icing so you could stop the play and then Bobrovsky could get his stick back was enormous, because they had to sit there for a minute. And Edmonton, that was really their last chance. I know they pulled the goalie, they have some chance at the end, but they were never able to control the puck. And let's be real, how they got to this comeback was because of their speed, and they were just gassed at the end of that game, and they had nothing left in the tank. But if they were able to get a few shots off with Bobrovsky not having his stick, hey, maybe Florida would have blocked them all and they wouldn't even got to Bobrovsky, but that icing was enormous in the game. So that's how I kind of process Game 7, and it's on one side, Florida avoids this epic choke job, but now they're in the Champions Club, and it's well-deserved. They're the best team in hockey, even though the record may not have showed it throughout the entirety of the year. Team was in the cup final a year ago. They were injured up against the Vegas Golden Knights. The next year, you knew it was truly Stanley Cup or bust, which can't be said for every team in the NHL. And it was Edmonton close, but yet so far. Like, they dangled the carrot right in front of you. Take a bite out of the apple, take a bite out of the carrot, however you want to say it, of being a part of one of the most memorable comebacks in sports history, and then it vanished right at the end. You know, it's like that commercial where they had the dollar on the fishing rod. It's like, oh, you almost get it. And then, nope, not so much. That's what it was like for the Edmonton Oilers. And you look back, that moment where they didn't score 7 minutes ago is going to be memorable. And then also, you can't dance around the obvious. Leon Draisaitl, I don't know if he was hurt. I don't know. You see that all the time in playoff hockey, where the run ends and you find out that this guy's dealing with like 9,000 injuries. It's also what Florida does. You take away the best players. That's what Florida does. We saw it all throughout their run. Obviously, McDavid had his great run where he had the most points in a cup final history in a two-game stretch when he had those 8 points. But Leon Draisaitl not scoring a single goal. Not a single goal in 7 games in the Stanley Cup final. That's alarming. So that's how I kind of processed Game 7 last night. Congratulations to Vinny Viola. Congratulations to the Florida Panthers. Well-deserved. They deserve to win the Stanley Cup. And I think the biggest reason why was in Game 7 that Sergei Bobrovsky stood on his head and did a really good job in what was a fun game. You know, obviously I wanted overtime. We didn't get it, but it was a very fun, good game. I could say a little bit of an anticlimactic third period, right? You're expecting some goal, either if it was Florida putting it away, going up 3-1, or Edmonton tying it and sending that baby into overtime. But there's really not much more outside of overtime that you could really ask for. And also, yesterday, I don't think that this is like a crazy take. I don't think you needed a PhD in hockey to figure this one out. But did anyone actually think that McDavid wasn't going to get the Conn Smythe? I know Subban and the great Mark Messier both didn't like, they say, oh, we understand if he gets it. But they thought if the Panthers won the game, it should have gone to someone on the Florida Panthers, whether that was Barkov or Bobrovsky. But you look at the Conn Smythe, and I know a lot of people shoot in for the Stanley Cup final. I know a lot of people shoot in for the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's not the award who's the most valuable player in the Cup final. It's for the entirety of the playoffs. Now, if you don't get to the Cup final, you're not going to win the award. You're not. But we have seen before, you know, Stu knows it, being a Devils fan, and I don't think you care when you win the cup. But in 2003, John Sebastian Jaguar, he won it as the goalie. And McDavid becomes the second skater, you know, second non-goalie to win the Conn Smythe. It's happened 6 times, win the Conn Smythe and be on the losing team. So it was pretty obvious when you have the fourth most points in the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs in an individual run that McDavid was going to win it. And also now when you have the most assists that any player has ever had, passing Wayne Gretzky in an individual run, in a Stanley Cup playoff. But let's not like dance around it as well. He doesn't want to win that trophy. There's a reason why he didn't go on the ice to accept it, nor should he. Because let's be real, you're the captain of the team. He did what captains do. You do the handshake line. You wait for every player to walk off the ice. And then you go be with your team. And, you know, hey, Florida Panthers fans, they want to boo him. They want a Bobrovsky to get it. That's fine. But the voting process for the Conn Smythe. And you know what? I know it's on a Thursday, so I probably don't need to do a Zach Gelb Show PSA, but I'm going to do a PSA anyway. It's amazing to me how they vote for these awards before the game actually ends or before the series ends. I think for the Conn Smythe, you got to submit your ballot with like 10 minutes left in the third period. We didn't even know who was going to win. So McDavid got every first place vote. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. There's 17. You guys just learned that count. There's 17 voters. 16 out of the 17 first place votes went to Connor McDavid. The one first place vote that didn't go to Connor McDavid was to Sergei Bobrovsky. But then think about this. So if one voter has Bobrovsky as the first and everyone else has McDavid, you would have thought Bobrovsky would have dominated the second place. He didn't receive a single second place vote. So in the breakdown, it was basically all of Barkov besides one person that voted for Hyman in second place, and then Ryan S. Clark of ESPN voted Bobrovsky for first, voted McDavid for second. So out of all these 17 ballots, Sergei Bobrovsky only got 7 points. And the way the point system works, it's 5 points for first place, 3 for second, and 1 for third. I'm not a math major, but I'll give you the math. He only got 3 total votes to win the Conn Smythe. Only 3. He got a first place vote, which is 5 points. And then he got 2 third place votes. Botcher, you're smarter than me. 5 plus 1 plus 1 equals 7.
7.
So he actually finished 4th, Bobrovsky, in the Conn Smythe. McDavid won with 83 points. Barkov second with 46. Gustav Forsling had 8. And he ended up finishing 3rd. And Bobrovsky finished 4th. So when I was sitting there, and I think I tweeted out with 10 minutes to go or something like that, hey, we talked about it on the show, win or lose, it's going to be McDavid. But if it's not McDavid, I would have thought it was Bobrovsky. And I have no problem with McDavid winning the Conn Smythe. If I was voting, I'd probably vote him 1. But the one argument that Panthers fans have, and hey, they had 2 Panthers players, Barkov, Forsling, and then you had McDavid in front of Bobrovsky, is if Connor McDavid can register 0 points in game 6 and game 7, right? That's what he did. Then why can't Bobrovsky not win the Conn Smythe, even though his game got away from him after blowing a 3-0 lead, but then he was able to steal it back after, you know, in game 7? Because if that series would have ended in 5, if that series even would have ended in 6, I think Bobrovsky would have won the Conn Smythe. That's how I would have thought it would happen. But once it got to a game 7, and you understand that McDavid has the 4th most points in the history of a Stanley Cup playoff run, right, in an individual run, has the most assists in an individual Stanley Cup playoff run, you knew that Connor McDavid was going to win. But if you're a Panthers fan, if that's your biggest gripe, oh, we didn't win the Conn Smythe, I don't think you care. Because the only trophy that really matters is who wins the Stanley Cup final and who wins Lord Stanley Cup. And that's the Florida Panthers for this year, and it's well-deserved. So do you have a problem with Connor McDavid winning the Conn Smythe? I don't, but I am shocked that Sergei Bobrovsky didn't finish 2nd, and he finished in 4th. For the Conn Smythe, 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. We'll take a break. When we come on back, Klay Thompson and the Golden State Warriors have reached a stalemate in their negotiations. Is Klay Thompson about to leave the Bay Area? We'll discuss. Also, John Rothstein going to join us coming up in 23 minutes from now, right here on the Zach Gelb Show, off and running on a very busy Tuesday on the Infinity Sports.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
So I'm reading an article from ESPN's Kendra Andrews, and it's basically the Golden State Warriors' view of Klay Thompson, and they make it clear that they want him back. And the headline is, Warriors strategize a way to keep Thompson. And it goes on in this article, and it talks about how ultimately the decision is in the hands of Klay Thompson. The choice will ultimately be Thompson's, but he plans to test for agency before a decision is made, sources told ESPN. Stu, I understand that this article is kind of the Warrior spin. Hey, there's some difficult things. There's not been a lot of communication right now. We've made it clear that we want him back. Heck, Mike Dunleavy Jr., the general manager of the Warriors, reiterated his stance on the 12-year guard, telling Kendra Andrews, we want him back. It's one thing, though, to say you want him back, and then it's, can you guys agree on the right price? Like, the Warriors should want him back at a significant discount, and they can't afford to do what they just did a year ago, where they elected to say, oh, we had this player who was great for us in Draymond Green. He probably doesn't have that many good years left. We think Draymond's really important to us, but we're basically giving him a four-year, $100 million deal based off what he did in the past, not how we project him to do in the future. The Warriors will deny that. The Warriors will tell you how, oh, they still need Draymond Green to win a championship. Baloney. They should blow this thing up, and they should get more help around Steph Curry for guys that could actually go win a championship in 2024 than next year, 2025. Draymond Green is not essential to go win a championship for the Golden State Warriors. So they already paid Draymond Green, and now it's like you got Klay. What's Klay looking for? And I don't know if Klay is actually mad or if this is just the games that people play now, but it's so petulant, and I know Draymond does his podcast, and he basically laughs at it, but, like, you're an all-time great Golden State Warrior. You're part of an incredible dynamic duo that won so many championships together, and Klay Thompson, no one could say a bad word about the guy. Like, I once covered Klay Thompson at a game that he played in Philadelphia, and he's doing a press conference afterwards, housing a slice of pizza while talking to the media, and eating a cheesesteak. Like, this is a man's man. This is a guy that a lot of people love. But for him to take down all the photos of the Golden State Warriors and to scrub his social media, like, okay, you're playing games, but is this really necessary? Like, you're above those games, Klay Thompson. You're going to be a Hall of Famer. You won four championships with the Warriors. Can't we just do these negotiations without the drama? And I'm sure his preference is to stay in the Bay Area, but he also wants to get one somewhat last big contract. And the Warriors would be crazy, and I don't know what the numbers are going to be, but the Warriors would be crazy to go above and beyond to keep Klay Thompson. Unfortunately, this guy's latter part of his careers were just derailed because of injuries, because his leg kept on getting torn up. And it's unfortunate. It sucks. But it's almost like Klay would be better off going somewhere else for a team that's maybe young, up and coming, and they need a championship kind of player. You get more money that way, and you try to go win somewhere else. Like, if that's Orlando with the Magic, or if it's Oklahoma City Thunder, like whoever it may be, a younger team. You know, that would be better off for Klay. Like, I get it. Klay wants to stay with the Warriors. You want to stay in one uniform. But that's not reality. That doesn't always happen. So the way that I look at it is that I think the Warriors don't have it in them to say no. Now, can the two sides meet in the middle on the price? We shall see. But, Stu, this article that was released yesterday evening, it's clearly the Warriors' version of this. And, of course, the Warriors are going to say, oh, the decision is in the hands of Klay Thompson. But is it really? Like, what are you offering?
Yeah, it definitely is the Warriors. And I'm kind of with you. Like, they should have broken this, you know, aside from Steph, obviously. I think they should have built around him differently, especially the last few years. And that started with Draymond. And it's just kind of crazy that they decided to hold on to Draymond and
try the Chris Paul experiment.
Yeah, which was that is a total failure. So, yeah, they're kind of in that complete mess. And I know we've talked about this in the past, especially when the Warriors had their exit earlier in the postseason. I think that window's done for Steph, unless they pull off some magic trick, which I don't really see happening. Who are they going to get to pair with Steph? Like, maybe if somehow they convinced LeBron to join.
That would be ideal. That'd be great. It'd be fun to see those two greats end their careers together.
That's probably their best case scenario, but I mean,
you know what? The Warriors and the Lakers kind of need to have a baby.
Yeah, get together and make birth another championship.
Yeah, the offspring, if they had a baby, would probably deliver a championship. Because, like, LeBron has AD. And Steph really has no one anymore. So Steph could use AD, and LeBron could use Steph. Now, I get it. It would just be LeBron and Steph. You wouldn't get AD into that equation.
Unless you trade Steph to the Lakers. Now you're talking.
Oh, look at you, you rat. Then all of a sudden, you'll be having your pom-poms up in the air saying, go Lakers again.
Go J.J. Redick. Love this guy.
And rooting for J.J. Redick.
That's right.
Oh, geez. Jeez Louise, that would be something. But let's go around the room here. Because I do think it's best for both parties to split, but there are human emotions involved in this. And it's not easy to say goodbye. You could do what Bob Myers did. Hey, just go join TV, and then you don't have to make that decision. That's why Bob Myers is on TV right now. He didn't have the heart. He didn't have it in his heart to tell Draymond Green, we don't want to pay anymore. And he knew that the decision with Klay Thompson was looming as well. That's why Bob Myers is doing TV right now. But let's say Klay goes somewhere else, or if Klay stays, who is an athlete that's been in one uniform that is active, that it would be bizarre out of the four major sports seeing that athlete go to another place and play in another uniform? And I started off, mine's Patrick Mahomes. And it's crazy how quickly, we all know how Mahomes is the best player in the sport now with Brady no longer a part of it, being retired. But you see what Patrick Mahomes has been able to do with the three championships, already winning a bunch of MVPs. He is the fabric of Kansas City. Kansas City was like, oh, when are we going to win another title again? Patrick Mahomes walks in, he gets them to four Super Bowls, and he's won three championships. And it's like now they're in the AFC championship game each and every year. It's kind of like the New England Patriots. They still have a long ways to go. But each and every year, you know, death taxes and bare minimum, the Patriots will be waking up in the AFC championship game. And you're going to eventually see a different version of Mahomes. And I know we've seen Brady leave New England and Rodgers leave Green Bay recently. And we saw Montana, right, leave the 49ers and go to Kansas City. So it's not like, hey, Brett Favre played with the Jets and the Vikings too. So it's not crazy to see a great quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback, Peyton Manning, going from the Colts to the Broncos to go somewhere else at the end of his career. But it would be bizarre seeing Patrick Mahomes at this point in another uniform. But there will be a different chapter in the Mahomes career, and that's down the road whenever that is, whenever Andy Reid retires, whenever Travis Kelce retires. And we know that's his organization, but then who else do they add to him to continue on what has been a dynasty so far with them winning back-to-back Super Bowls and three championships that they've already run. So my answer would be Patrick Mahomes. It would be bizarre at this point, out of active players, to see him in a different uniform. Who's yours, Stu?
So mine is somebody that I think actually should, probably a few years ago, should have been on a different team and should have left.
What sport?
Baseball.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about.
And I just can't picture him in another uniform, and that's Mike Trout.
Yeah.
Like, he should be in another uniform, but if I think, like, do I picture him as a Dodger? No. Do I picture him as a Yankee? No. Met, no. Giant, no. Philly, no. Cub,
maybe
no.
Phillies, just because of the hometown connection.
Right, but even, like, I don't know. I just see him as an Angel, and I don't see that changing. So, again, he should be on a different team, but I can't envision it.
I don't think he wants to be. Like, there are stars who don't like the spotlight. Mike Trout is a star who kind of wants to live in obscurity. You know, the most you kind of ever see Mike Trout is when he's at an Eagles game, for crying out loud, and he's sitting in the end zone in his comfy season tickets. Like, that's the most personality you ever see out of Mike Trout. Now, maybe with the injuries, losing Ohtani, this pushes him to finally request that trade. But if it hasn't happened now, I'm not holding my breath thinking that it's going to be different and he's finally going to force his way out of the Angels. But he should, because it stinks for the sport that we've only seen one of the greatest players, right? The best player in the last 10 years of Major League Baseball make the postseason once, and he quickly got swept out of the postseason. Botcher, who is yours? An active player that's been in one uniform that it would be bizarre if you saw him go somewhere else.
It's kind of funny to say this because they're a match made in dysfunction heaven. Dak Prescott.
Huh.
With how much he's been under contract negotiations, I feel like every single year for the last 5 years.
That's the drama Dallas choking. This is the way they like it.
I just don't think he'll go anywhere else. They're perfect for each other, just dysfunctional.
If he wants to, he can, because he has a no-tag clause, so he could hit free agency this year, and I think there's a chance of that happening. But if you say, Zach, gun to your head, is Dak Prescott back with the Cowboys next year? I'm saying yes. You know who the answer is, though? And I know I gave Mahomes. It's Steph Curry. I know we talked about it with Klay Thompson, and even Stu and I were joking about either getting Steph to LA or having LeBron join him with the Golden State Warriors. But it would be weird seeing Steph somewhere else. But with him and how awesome he is at shooting three-point shots, like, even when he starts to decline, he could go somewhere and be like a six-man or a seven. That should be like a three-point specialist. He could go play for a lot longer than the average pro would be able to play, because if it gets down to, I know it's all awesome how Steph maneuvers around the court and then hits these ridiculous three-point shots, but if his legs eventually slow down, he could literally just sit in the corner and jack up a bunch of threes per game. You know, kind of like Ray Allen was one of the greatest three-point shooters I've ever seen, right? And Ray Allen, at the end of his career, he always bounced around. But in Miami, he was just, hey, stick Ray in the corner, and you know Ray Allen's going to hit a bunch of threes. All right, it's Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Who's going to be the number one pick of the NBA draft tomorrow evening? When is Bronny James going to go? How about Zach Edey? We'll connect with CBS Sports College Basketball insider, the always entertaining John Rothstein, when we return. Update time first, though. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman.
Start your summer road trip at Midas and get up to $30 off your next repair service. Plus, get a free closer look vehicle check to make sure you're road trip ready. So if you need brake service, an alignment check, or tune-up, hit up Midas for up to $30 off. For more details, request your appointment at Midas.com.
Plug in a Hyundai EV and the extraordinary happens. It's not just the ultra-fast charging capability and long range in the IONIQ 5 and IONIQ 6, or the adventure-seeking spirit of the Kona Electric, or the groundbreaking 601-horsepower IONIQ 5N. And it's not just the comfort in knowing that every Hyundai EV is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited electric battery warranty. Hyundai's EVs transform a low hum into a loud adventure. They bring color to your journey and turn energy into main character energy. So forget everything you thought you knew about EVs and turn the extraordinary into something truly electrifying. There's joy in every journey.
EPA estimated 303-mile driving range for 2024 IONIQ 5 SE SEL limited rear-wheel drive and 361-mile driving range for 2024 IONIQ 6 SE long-range rear-wheel drive with fully charged battery. Estimated range varies for other models and trims and depends on battery capacity, temperature options, and other factors. Limited battery warranty covers defects and materials for 10 years or 100,000 miles, whichever occurs first. See owner's manual for complete warranty details and limitations. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details.
TuneIn is the audio platform with something for everyone. News.
In order to secure convictions in a court of law, it is essential that we conclusively.
Sports.
Shot clock at 4. Doncic. The step back 3. You bet.
Music.
You set my world on fire. Yes,
and even podcasts. Whatever you love, hear it right here on TuneIn. Go to TuneIn.com or download the TuneIn app to start listening.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All right, it is the Infinity Sports Network, and it is the Zach Gelb Show. We gear up for the NBA draft that comes your way tomorrow. Remember, this is now a two-day event, so round one will be on Wednesday, and then you have round two on Thursday. You can give me a follow on Instagram and Twitter, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. I'm actually going to the NBA draft this year. The last time I was at the NBA draft, it was when I had that viral moment with Kobe White. With the, Cam Johnson, you know, just went 11. Then he was like, wow, that's crazy, bro. And it was like the most memorable moment from that draft. You know, I did go to the press conference last year, the pre-draft press conference for Victor Wembanyama. But I will actually be in attendance at the NBA draft coming up tomorrow evening. And we don't know who's going to be the first overall pick, because I was reading that Alex Saar, he did not work out. He elected to not work out with the Atlanta Hawks, so there's some feelings that Atlanta's going to pass on him with the first overall pick, and maybe he'll go second with Washington. So this is not like last year where it's Victor Wembanyama. We knew that he was going to go one, and then the draft really started with the second overall pick. But let's welcome in from CBS Sports, also with DraftKings, the great John Rothstein, college basketball's hungriest insider. He's kind enough to join us once again on the Zach Gelb Show. John, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been, my man?
Great, Zach, but whoever gave you that reader, I got to correct them. It is FanDuel, not DraftKings.
Sorry, my apologies. Yeah. John Rothstein, okay. on behalf of FanDuel here with us. Let me start you off, because I follow you on Twitter, and I know that you are against NCAA expansion for the tournament. And I'm 100% with you in college football. I can't stand that they went from 4 to 12 as well. We know in the NCAA tournament they're at 68. It seems like, though, it's inevitable this is going to go to 72 or 76.
I mean, it might be inevitable by what, you know, is really kind of going through social media. But I think if you look right now at the NCAA tournament, the NCAA tournament is far and away the best postseason event that there is in all of sports. So tinkering with that does not make, in my opinion, any sense at all. And I think if you look at one of the things that I've been very, very opinionated about if there was one thing that I would like to see altered with the NCAA tournament in its current form, which features 68 teams, I think it would be better for the tournament if the first four in Dayton featured the last eight at-large teams, and any team that earned an automatic qualifier was then granted an opportunity to start the NCAA tournament in the round of 64 if you win your conference tournament. But you think about expanding the NCAA tournament, or even the people who have that discussion, you are then saying that you are going to minimize what goes on during the regular season. And Zach, you know this as well as anybody else. One of the things that really brings people into college basketball from the periphery, and even general sports fans for that matter, as early as the early days of January, is the bubble. Who is the first four teams out? Who is the last four teams in? It's really part of the vernacular of our country from really the end of the Super Bowl until Selection Sunday. And if you expand that, you are going to take that away. Now, I know that there's a lot of people who were extremely frustrated that their team or program didn't get into the NCAA tournament last year. The Big East had three teams that you could have made a case for to get to the NCAA tournament: Seton Hall, St. John's, and Providence, who were all left out of the field. Pitt was also playing great basketball at the end of the year out of the ACC. But part of the greatness of March Madness is the fact that the postseason truly begins during championship week, because every single team that's a part of its conference tournament can play its way in to the NCAA tournament. And a perfect example of that is NC State. NC State was down 3 points to Virginia in the ACC tournament semifinals. The Wolfpack were nowhere near an at-large bid. Isaac McNeely, an excellent free throw shooter for Virginia, is at the free throw line to ice the game. He misses the free throw. Michael O'Connell gets the ball for NC State. Tony Bennett opts not to foul up three. Michael O'Connell does a double clutch, banks in a three. NC State beats Virginia, gets the automatic qualifier the next night against North Carolina, and then goes on one of the most improbable runs to the Final Four that we've seen. So the person who may make a case for expansion would say, well, that just reiterates why we should expand the field, because NC State was good enough to get to the Final Four. I say nonsense, because part of the greatness of March Madness is the fact that that entire chain of events and that one play from Michael O'Connell changed an entire season. The NCAA tournament does not need to expand today, tomorrow, or ever. The only change that I would make would be to make the first four the final eight at-large teams in the bracket, and then obviously have any automatic qualifier in the round of 64. This is not a participation trophy getting to the NCAA tournament. It's an exclusive club, and we need to stop the talk for expanding the field.
John Rothstein here with us on behalf of FanDuel. Also does a great job, CBS Sports, basketball, college basketball insider. Let me briefly get your thoughts on Danny Hurley before we talk about the draft. I thought the Lakers could have offered him a lot more money. It was a six-year deal, reportedly $70 million. Did you ever think they were very close to seeing Hurley leaving Connecticut, UConn, and going out to Los Angeles?
If it would have been extravagant money, like you were referencing right there, and it was in a Godfather-type offer.
Like 90 to 100 million, right?
Yes, if Danny Hurley was going to be offered, you know, $15 million a year to coach the Los Angeles Lakers, I think it could obviously been a little bit different. But I also think that if we would have seen the Boston Celtics or the New York Knicks offer Danny Hurley the job, if that was the job that he was being courted for, we might have a different result, because, you know, that job was in the Northeast. But, you know, Danny Hurley is somebody who has now carved out space as the best coach in college basketball. He is on a two-year run that is really unprecedented in the modern era when you think about his NCAA tournament dominance. You know, Zach, when I think back to the teams that have won back-to-back national championships, you know, really since I've been covering college basketball and really been alive, it's been Duke in 91 and 92. It's been Florida in 06 and 07. And I think back to those teams, you know, Florida played a very, very good Ohio State team in the 2007 national championship game. It was a competitive game. Greg Oden, Mike Conley, all those guys. Florida won by 9 points. Duke, obviously, in its trip to get to back-to-back national titles in 91 and 92, needed the buzzer beater from Christian Laettner to beat Kentucky in the regional final, and then was actually losing by 5 points to Indiana in the final four and came back to beat Indiana by 3 points, I believe it was 81-78 in the 1992 final four. UConn under Dan Hurley has won 12 NCAA tournament games in the last 2 years by an average of 21.7 points per game. I mean, this is really unfathomable when you think about UConn's dominance in the postseason. And I think when you look next year, you know, into college basketball, a season that's going to be filled with interesting storylines, UConn's quest to win a third national championship will be at the top. And I think if you look at UConn's roster on paper, you might say that, you know, the ranking is based more on what this program has accomplished the last 2 years versus maybe what people think this team can be. But then you remember who's cooking the meal in the kitchen. And if it's Dan Hurley cooking that meal, the sauce is probably going to taste just right when it's time to eat.
John Rothstein here with us. I kind of feel like Bronny James is going to get drafted by the Lakers in the second round. But how do you view him as a prospect?
About a year ago, I was at a USC practice, and I was watching their team work out, and I watched Bronny James very closely, and I said, this guy's got a chance to be a really good multi-year college player. He's got a chance, I think, to be an exceptional perimeter defender. He's an underrated passer. But unfortunately, delayed gratification was never in the cards for Bronny James. You know, he wouldn't be even in the discussion to be drafted if he wasn't the son of LeBron James.
Where do you think, like, obviously you think then he should have stayed in college.
Yes.
How much of a consideration was that actually? Because there was a little talk that maybe he'd go transfer to Duquesne and play for Drew Joyce, who obviously played high school ball with LeBron.
You know, everything that I read from obviously people who cover the NBA every day, you know, made it pretty clear that one of the goals and the dreams for LeBron James before he retires is to play for his son. And I think that's the way this narrative right now and the storyline is going to unfold. Obviously, you know, his agent Rich Paul came out last week and said that Bronny James only worked out for two teams, the Suns and the Lakers. The Lakers, as you mentioned and referenced, are on the board of 55. I think that's where we expect Bronny James to land, you know, if he is going to be drafted coming up tomorrow or the following day in the 2024 NBA draft.
I saw it was talked about today by Landry Fields that the Hawks got rejected by Sarr with the workout. They have the number one overall pick. So I'll ask you a two-part question. Who do you think is going to go number one overall tomorrow evening? And then also, because it could be a different answer, who do you think is the best player in this draft?
I would trade the number one pick if I had the number one pick and I was an NBA executive, because the narrative surrounding this NBA draft is obviously that it's a very weak draft. It's weak at the top in the sense that I don't see a ton of franchise caliber players at the professional level in the NBA draft. But I do think as you get further on down the line, there's a number of good players who could have productive careers in a certain role in the NBA for a long time. But I think if you're an executive right now with one of the top draft picks, you want to be thinking really heavily about trying to move down, because this is the type of NBA draft where you could get the same player down the line at 9 or 10 that you could get at 3 or 4.
Who do you think, though, is the best player in the draft?
There's so many different foreign prospects, Zach. You know, I don't want to obviously act like, you know, I have, you know, seen these foreign prospects as much as I've seen, you know, obviously the college prospects. And another thing, too, we saw in college basketball last year a number of programs take chances on foreign prospects who were projected to be first round picks or lottery picks, and that didn't come to fruition. Two programs that took a number of foreign prospects on were UCLA and Xavier. I think now, considering the way he's developing and considering how much he can change the game defensively, I think you would have to think long and hard about Donovan Clingan being such a game changer and being able to do so many different things defensively in the NBA as somebody that you would take number one, you know, in the 2024 NBA draft. The face-up game is improving. We saw elements of that offensively later in the season. And the one thing that I've always liked about Donovan Clingan, especially when you're talking about his defense, it's not so much the shots that he blocks, it's the shots that he alters. And I think you saw that in that dominant run that UConn had 30-0 against Illinois in the Elite Eight.
I only got 30 seconds left. Imagine if you get Wembanyama and Clingan on the same team in San Antonio with them picking four.
That would sell some tickets for sure. I don't know if it's Duncan and Robinson, but they could run it back for sure.
John Rothstein does a tremendous job. College basketball's hungriest insider for CBS Sports and also does a great job contributing to FanDuel. Kind enough to join us right now on the Zach Gelb Show. John, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Zach. Always great rapping with you, man.
Likewise. Thanks so much. There he is, John Rothstein. Yeah, could you imagine that? You get Wemby and Klingon down low for the Spurs. I know Wemby plays all over the place, but just with how many incredible shot blocks that you've just seen from Klingon, and then obviously Wembanyama could have been the defensive player of the year this year in the NBA. That's how awesome he was. That would be really damn cool. So appreciate J.R. John Rothstein joining us for a few minutes, and I agree with him. They don't need to expand the NCAA tournament whatsoever. It would just be – I don't need to see more teams. You know, it's worse for college football. It devalues the regular season more, but it just seems so unnecessary. 68, they've already expanded a few years ago. I think that's a good enough number. All righty, we'll take a timeout. Connor McDavid didn't win it all last night. Who's the best player? Who are some of the best players to never win a championship?
Start your summer road trip at Midas and get up to $30 off your next repair service. Plus, get a free closer look vehicle check to make sure you're road trip ready. So if you need a brake service, an alignment check, or tune-up, hit up Midas for up to $30 off. For more details, request your appointment at Midas.com.
Plug in a Hyundai EV and the extraordinary happens. It's not just the ultra-fast charging capability and long range in the Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, or the adventure-seeking spirit of the Kona Electric, or the groundbreaking 601-horsepower Ioniq 5N. And it's not just the comfort in knowing that every Hyundai EV is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited electric battery warranty. Hyundai's EVs transform a low hum into a loud adventure. They bring color to your journey and turn energy into main character energy. So forget everything you thought you knew about EVs and turn the extraordinary into something truly electrifying. There's joy in every journey.
EPA estimated 3 to 3 mile driving range for 2024 Ioniq 5 SE SEL limited rear wheel drive and 361 mile driving range for 2024 Ioniq 6 SE long range rear wheel drive with fully charged battery. Estimated range varies for other models and trims and depends on battery capacity, temperature options, and other factors. Limited battery warranty covers defects and materials for 10 years or 100,000 miles, whichever occurs first. See owner's manual for complete warranty details and limitations. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.